Hi, thanks for joining. Please make sure you subscribe to follow us on all the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube, the stuff we write on Substack, as well as quick takes on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing with all your friends and family. And if you have questions or comments about the stuff we're putting out there, please make sure you leave them in comments to us. We'll be more than happy to cover them in future talks and in further discussions on the topics you have questions about. There has been a lot of discussion about the use of fasting for dietary purposes as relates to weight loss, but there's also some questions, comments, concerns, myths, misconceptions, misinformation, disinformation that's out there about the other things that fasting can do for the body. Some of them include things like, oh, well, it will boost your immunity. Some will discuss the fact that it will reset your white blood cells. Some will discuss the fact that fasting is going to relieve any mental fog that might come about from having any type of illness. Like I said, there's a lot of myths and misconceptions out there about fasting and what fasting can do physiologically for the body, beyond just the concept of using fasting, using intermittent fasting, and using time-restricted feeding as a means to induce or cause weight loss. So let's go ahead and let's talk about what fasting does physiologically and how we can use fasting as part of a holistic approach to combat non-communicable diseases and make ourselves healthier. So let's talk about that.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard or believed to be true about how the human body works and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
We're going to start our discussion here in terms of fasting and the impact that fasting has on our physiology. We have to put the caveat into the discussion, which is similar to the caveat we had as it relates to why some people will see weight loss and other people will not see weight loss, even when following the same type of diet. In particular, we're looking at the biological responses, the physiological responses that are going to be different between our sociological identified males versus our sociological identified females, the XX versus the XY, or the XY male versus the XX female. Even if we start to look at it in terms of transgender qualifiers here, when we start looking at the impact that fasting has physiologically, there's two things we have to look at in terms of the impact that fasting is going to have. We have to look at it in terms of metabolic impact. We have to look at it in terms of hormonal impact. The two impacts are going to correspond with each other, and it's going to impact overall changes that we're going to see as relates to changes in body mass, changes in health status, changes in inflammation. We start looking at the claims that we get as relates to what fasting offers in terms of long-term versus short-term. This is where we have to get into some terminology here before we get into the greater discussion. Short-term versus long-term responses that we're going to see and overall changes that we might have. This is where we get the different types of fasting options and the different types of fasts that can take place. If we look at various types of dietary patterns or dogmatic practices in our diets. If we look at what happens physiologically in between meals, we are in a fast in between meals, even though physiologically we're not acting as if we're in a fast. We're in what's usually referred to as a postprandial response physiologically, as we're post-meal, pre-meal in terms of responses, for somewhere between 2 and 5 to 6 hours following a meal, depending upon what nutrients are the primary macronutrients within the meal. And during that time, we're having a hormonal response that is all about storing. We're going to have a shift in metabolism, and that shift in metabolism is going to be towards storage of materials. That shift in metabolism towards storage of materials is going to correspond with changes in hormones and changes in neurotransmitters. That's going to lead to a reduced metabolic rate to a certain extent. But more importantly, it's going to cause a change in overall rate of metabolic functions, even though we won't necessarily see a total reduction in our overall basal metabolic rate. This is where we're going to see spikes in a lot of the hormones that get bad reputations as relates to metabolism and metabolic diseases. So we're going to see a spike in insulin, regardless of how much carbohydrates or sugar happens to be in the diet. This is where we're going to see swings in GLP-1. So we're going to see swings in neuropeptide Y. So we're going to see swings in leptin and see swings in ghrelin. We're going to see swings in regulatory hormones that are going to determine the rate at which we digest, the rate at which we are going to deposit the nutrients that have been digested and absorbed into the tissues of the body. So we're going to see drops in cortisol. We're going to see drops in glycogen. All of these swings and changes is an indication in terms of metabolism that we're storing. We're getting stuff ready for either rebuilding tissues or growing tissues, or simply just storing the macronutrients for use at a later point in time. That is what's happening in the first few hours following a meal. As we swing forward into the fast, as we go further into fasting, we're going to see changes in some of those hormones. We're going to see a slow reduction in leptin. We see a slow reduction in insulin. We're going to see a slow rise in ghrelin. We're going to see a slow rise in glucagon. We're going to see a slow reduction in GLP-1. We're going to see a change in oxytocin modulin, neuropeptide Y. We're going to see changes in dopamine and serotonin circulations, both within the cerebral cortex within the brain, as well as within the body itself. We're going to see changes in cortisol. We see changes in glucagon over the next 5 to 7 hours following that first 4 hours or so, with spikes coming in cortisol, with spikes coming in glucagon, with spikes coming in ghrelin, typically corresponding to about 30 to 40 minutes ahead of when we would expect to be hungry next. If we can push past the hunger signals, if we can push past that desire to eat, then we'll start seeing changes in responses to those changes in cortisol, those changes in glucagon, those changes in ghrelin, those signals that are indicating that we're hungry, that we need to eat to offset the fuel loss that's happened from expending the nutrients that were consumed in the previous meal. And this is where we get part of that difference, biologically speaking, based off of the sensitivity that individuals have to those hormones, in particular, the sex difference that we see between males and females, as it relates to sensitivity to leptin and the impact that leptin has on key regulatory hormones and key regulatory neurotransmitters within the hypothalamus and within the pituitary. That's going to impact changes in overall metabolic rates and overall metabolic functions, independent of any type of quote-unquote caloric balance that might be at play. But one of the things that we're going to start seeing is changes in the way in which the tissues of the body are going to respond to some of the key hormones at play here, the hormones that are deemed the counter-regulatory hormones, the cortisol, the glucagon, the growth hormone, that are all going to elevate in an attempt to free up non-glucose-dependent fuel sources, in particular lipids. But we also will see some utilization of amino acids as we get into the prolonged fast. And this is where, within a lot of the internet literature, they'll talk about, oh, we see a rise in growth hormone. And since the internet likes, and the authors of these passages in the internet like to link growth hormone to growing tissues, without understanding that growth hormone is a whole cluster of various types of hormones that will have different types of impacts physiologically. And the growth hormone that we're looking at as that's elevating at this point in time is the smaller growth hormone molecule that's going to be involved with regulation of lipid metabolism, fat metabolism, that's going to stimulate the breakdown of fat tissue to free up fats so that we have a fuel source that can go into a process known as beta oxidation, so that we can extract the energy within the fuels of the fats to stimulate and produce more ATP for the cells so that the cells can produce the work that is necessary in order for us to sustain, in order for us to have optimal performance, for in order for us to go about our activities of daily living. And so we'll see these swings in key metabolic hormones. And these swings in key metabolic hormones are going to impact some of that short-term fasting responses that we're going to see, the short-term fasting responses we're going to see over the 5 hours to 1 day following that last meal. And so when we start looking at fasting, it's always timed out from when the last meal was, where we're going to look at, okay, I am postprandial, I am post-meal for that first 3 to 6 hours following that. The next set of time is where I'm going to start seeing my shift towards fasting response in terms of the fuel utilization, as well as the metabolic responses that can lead to some of the claims that we get about what fasting can do for the body, where a lot of these claims have to be kind of caveated, has to have a little kind of yeah, but indicated within it, because the differences that we see is going to be based off of leptin sensitivity and the impact that leptin has on metabolic functions, in particular, overall metabolic rates. But we also have to look at it in terms of how all of the various hormones that are going to be regulating metabolism, growth response, inflammation response, will be based off of how the hypothalamus and how the pituitary will be regulating feeding responses, and how those feeding responses are going to regulate overall metabolic functions. It's not just as simple as, oh, well, I don't eat and I get these responses. It's how the lack of nutrients or the excessive restriction of nutrients is going to change hormonal responses. And it's those changes in hormonal responses linked with the changes in metabolic functions that's going to lead to the physiological changes that we see during fasts and following fasts that can be seen in terms of body compositional changes, weight changes, but also changes in overall health based off the changes in inflammation and the changes in chronic inflammation that's linked with non-communicable diseases, where we will see distinct differences in between individuals in terms of body composition and in terms of body mass changes, where those who are highly sensitive to leptin are going to have lower overall rates of changes than those who are less sensitive to leptin. And that's simply because of the regulatory effect that leptin has on a whole host of metabolic functions that we don't normally think about, because leptin usually gets discussed as it relates to the leptin-ghrelin balance and the link between leptin and obesity, or more importantly, overeating and changes in fat metabolism. It's this change in fat metabolism, the change in the way in which we're going to utilize fats, that everybody's going to look at as why fasting is going to have an impact on body weight and body composition. But that's not really going to be the case here. That may happen long term, but what we're looking at is we're looking at what's happening physiologically within the fast, not what's happening long term because of the fast. And so what ends up happening when we're involved in the fast, when we're within we have that post-absorptive, post-prandial 3 to 6 hour window, and then we're extending it out from there in that first 24 hours where we're starting our fast, we're going to start seeing changes within activation of enzymes within cells that's going to change the metabolism taking place within the cells. We're going to start to adjust the fuel sources that we're using. So we will start using more fats within metabolism. We'll shift away from glucose. We'll shift away from carbohydrates. We'll be using carbohydrates at the carbohydrate-dependent tissues. We'll be saving carbohydrates for those cells that are solely reliant upon carbohydrates for their fuel source, blood cells, neurons, whereas other cells in the liver, cells in skeletal muscle cells, bone cells, that have the ability to use other fuel sources will be encouraged to use the other fuel sources hormonally. And so what happens is we change some of the enzymatic actions. We start changing activation of lipid oxidizing enzymes, and we slow down the rate at which we're going to be utilizing glucose and carbohydrates at those other sources. one of the enzymes that gets spoken about a lot in this nature of the first 24, 36 hours of the fast is this is the set of enzymes known as PPARs. And one of the things that's going to happen with PPARs is that we're going to start to change lipid metabolism, not just in adipose cells, not just in fat cells, but in other cells throughout the body. And what this PPAR is going to do is it's going to, particularly the PPARs of importance here that we're going to look at, is that they're not just going to change the lipid metabolism, but they're also going to help with reduction of inflammatory signals. Inflammatory signals coming away from adipose cells that are activating immune cells in order to cause additional inflammation. And so as we go through that first 24 hours of fasting, we start to see not just a shift in metabolism, not just a shift in hormones, but we're going to start seeing a reduction in levels of inflammation. We'll get to a little bit more on the inflammation side here in a second, but let's stick with this fat metabolism issue and the PPAR activation. And along with the PPAR activation, along with the increase of fat oxidation, we're going to start to have increased amounts of ketone. We're going to start to have ketogenesis taking place. It's not going to be very rapid during the first 12, 14, 16 hours of our fast, but as we start approaching 24, 36 hours of fast, we're going to start seeing drastic elevations of ketones, acetone, acetoacetone, beta-hydroxybutyrate, where the increase in the ketones are going to be the indication of shifts in energy metabolism, where shifts in energy metabolism is going to take most of the body tissues, the non-glucose dependent tissues, away from carbohydrates and towards fats and ketones in order to meet energy demands. This is where if we're doing low carbohydrate diets and we want to see if we're actually low enough in our carbohydrates, we will use like a urine dipstick for ketone bodies to see if we're excreting large amounts of ketone bodies, because we normally don't secrete ketones at high levels unless we're in a period of starvation, a period of prolonged fast, where we're going into 24, 36 hours of fasting, where we have ever-increasing amounts of lipids being metabolized, being broken apart to provide fuels for the cells to regenerate ATP, where the extra bit of fuel that's not being used immediately is going to get converted into ketone bodies. And that's where we're going to get that ketone response. That ketone response is going to further drop inflammation. It's going to further drop inflammation intracellularly. It's going to drop inflammation intracellularly by reducing ROS and oxidative stress in the cells. The reduction in ROS, the reduction in oxidative stress, is going to lead to changes in the mitochondrial function. So it's going to make the mitochondria more aerobically capable, to simplify it. That shift in mitochondria leads to a secondary shift that we'll start seeing as we progress into the later stages of our 1 day, 1.5, 2 day fast window, where we're going to start seeing increases in the amount of mitochondria that are available, increase in the enzymes within the mitochondria. But not just enzymes in the mitochondria is going to help us with our ATP, not just enzymes within the mitochondria is going to help us with our making of fat metabolites to use as additional fuel sources, the beta oxidation enzymes. We'll also see changes in ketogenic enzymes, but we'll also see changes within some fat cells where we're going to have a different type of enzyme coming into play. And the different kind of enzymes can come into play within the mitochondria is going to lead to increases in thermogenesis, increases in heat production, as opposed to increases in ATP production within those mitochondria. That's going to lead to what's referred to as a Beijing effect that takes place within some of the adipose tissue within the body. This Bayesian effect triggers secondary enzymatic and secondary hormonal responses throughout the body, which further reduces some of the inflammatory signals and some of the oxidative stress signals that can occur if we're looking at utilizing this fasting as a means to reduce fat mass. But once again, we're not in the state of reducing fat mass yet. We haven't gone long enough in the fast in order to actually see significant amount of body weight loss, significant amount of fat mass loss. All we're dealing with right now within this first day or so window of time is simply setting up the changes in metabolism and the changes in hormones that can lead to weight loss if we have repeated fasting events. This is where that the intermittent fasting that we've talked about previously, the time-restricted eating that we've talked about previously, or the alternating day fasting that we've talked about previously come into play. This is also where, if you happen to be a leptin-sensitive individual, you're going to have less response utilizing the intermittent fasting as opposed to the time-restricted eating because of the impact that changes in leptin is going to have on overall metabolism. The other thing's going to take place as it relates to the mitochondria before we get into the immune issues and the inflammation issues is we're going to start seeing changes in thyroid hormone productions. And the change in thyroid hormone productions is going to impact mitochondrial functions. It's going to put a stress on the mitochondria that's going to generate signals within the mitochondria in order to increase the amount of mitochondria that are available and the enzyme density of mitochondria in order to utilize fats for fuels. So over that first day, day and a half of fasting, we've shifted our fuel sources away from glucose, except for glucose-obligated tissues, the neurons and the immune cells and the blood cells, to fat and utilizing fats either as beta oxidation or in the case of within the liver, generating non-liver sourced glucose. That is, we're going to take glucose metabolites that are in circulation, pyruvate, lactate, or backbones from amino acids, or the glycerol that's coming off of the lipids, off the fats, and undergoing gluconeogenesis in order to get glucose back by altering the rate and speed at which the Cori cycle is taking place. That's the way in which the liver is able to clear glucose metabolites in order to regenerate glucose. This is also where, within that first 24 hour of a fast, we start seeing drops in levels of energy, put quotes around that. We're also going to see a reduction in my power capacity. You're going to see my reduction in my work capacity simply because I am going to be limited to how much glycolysis I can do at the cells, how much glycolysis I can do at the skeletal muscles in order to generate the rapid contractions that are necessary in order to have high power output or have a variable power output to have long-term work output. So we have in the first 24 hours of fasting, we're going to start seeing changes in the way in which the hypothalamus is responding as it regulates hunger. We have a change within the cells based off of hormonal changes that's going to lead to a shift in fuel metabolism. We're going to also start seeing changes in hormones as it relates to tissue growth, where we're going to see a different type of growth hormone being produced. We're going to see a reduction in insulin-like growth factor. We're going to see a reduction in other growth factors that's going to minimize the total amount of growth that can take place during the fast. However, after the fast gets done, an interesting thing happens. The receptors on cells become more sensitive to those growth factors than they were before the fasting took place. Part of this has to deal with said principle, adaptations to imposed demands. Part of this has to deal with changes in inflammatory signals, which is where we're going to go next in terms of what happens during that first 24 hours of fasting in terms of responses. Because of the reduction in oxidative stress, because of the changes in activation of adipose tissue, which reduces inflammatory signals coming away from the adipose tissues. We get a differential effect in terms of activation of immune cells, in particular B cells, and in particular macrophages, the cells that are going to be predominantly involved with inflammatory response, and the B cells predominantly involved with antibody response. When we have fasting taking place during that 24-hour timeline, we're going to start seeing changes in the growth signaling for B cell development. We're going to start to stimulate additional B cells as we start to stretch out that fast into a 24-hour, 36-hour timeline. We're going to start seeing changes in macrophage activation, and we're going to start seeing a reduction in inflammatory hormones. We're going to see a reduction in the hormones that are going to stimulate inflammation taking place. That reduction in inflammation taking place, along with the increased activation of B cells for growth, that is, we're going to have more B cells available, is going to increase the specificity of immune response coming out of the fast, when the fast ends. If we continue to have prolonged fast, those changes that we see within the inflammation starts to wane, starts to drop. And that's because we start seeing ever escalating levels of cortisol and ever escalating levels of epinephrine. The ever escalating levels of cortisol and the ever escalating levels of epinephrine have an impact on inflammation. It's going to, for the epinephrine, it's going to trigger activation of inflammation, non-specified inflammation, but at the same time, it's going to trigger metabolic responses that we would think about in terms of quote unquote fight or flight. It's going to stimulate the release of stored fats within fatty deposits within the cells. Cortisol, on the other hand, is going to, instead of triggering widespread inflammatory responses, it's going to hopefully trigger specified inflammatory responses, which is where we have to be careful with how long we allow that cortisol to be elevated. Too much cortisol for too long period of time can have an adverse effect because it's going to change the way in which tissue growth and tissue breakdown is going to take place. And the responsiveness of tissues to hormones that are going to hopefully correctly regulate metabolic functions, it's going to change the way in which PPARs are being activated to, instead of minimizing inflammatory responses, will accentuate inflammatory responses. It's going to shift tissue breakdown away from breaking of lipids to breaking of amino acids, which is where we have to be careful where we start having these prolonged fasts going to 36, 48, 64 hours in time. We can't have multiple day fasts. We can't have this heading out into a 4-day event. Most of the studies that look at fasting in a 24, 36, and at most a 48-hour fast. Some can and do take it out to 72 hours of fasting, but the benefits that we get physiologically at that prolonged state of fasting gets minimized by the adverse events that can take place because of the prolonged amount of fasting. And so if we're to look at what happens in terms of the cells of the body to these fasts, we're going to see changes in hormones changes in metabolism that for the cells is going to limit the total amount of cellular growth that can take place. We will not have good muscle growth. We will not have good bone growth if we're fasting during our workouts, if we're fasting during a time where we're trying to grow. However, within the muscles, we're going to see a possible differentiation of muscle cell fiber types, particularly within the type 2 classifications of fibers, away from the very, very fast twitch to the moderately fast twitch, away from the glycolytic, completely anabolic, anaerobic response tissues, to the oxidative glycolytic fibers that can utilize the fats, can utilize amino acid metabolites as part of their fuel sources in order to do the muscle contractions. We're going to see an increase in B cell activation and in B cell regeneration, as well as B cell proliferation. We're going to see a sequestration, a reduction in macrophage activity. That reduction in macrophage activity is not just within the body itself, but we will see a change in the glial cells within the central nervous system, particularly the glial cells that act as immune cells within the nervous system, that if we time the fasting correct, can lead to increased neural growth, increased neural plasticity, increased neural differentiation that can offset some neurodegenerative diseases. It's not going to reverse neurodegenerative diseases. It's not going to cure neurodegenerative diseases. But once again, in that first window of fasting, we start seeing changes within neural growth signals. We start seeing changes within neural oxidative stress that minimizes the amount of neural inflammation. And by minimizing the amount of neural inflammation, we're able to accentuate neural growth and neural differentiations. Same thing is taking place within the skeletal muscle. We're going to see that change in muscle cell differentiation. We're not going to see huge amounts of growth either in the skeletal muscle or in the neurons, but we will see a lot of differentiation. We'll see a lot of plasticity taking place metabolically within those tissues. And most of this goes back to what's happening in terms of inflammation and the changes in inflammation that occur due to the reduction in fuel intake, nutrient intake, that's going to shift the amount of glucose in circulation. By shifting the amount of glucose in circulation, it's going to reduce activation on macrophages, reduce activation on immune cells. That's going to lower the total amount of inflammation taking place. Over that 24-hour, 36-hour, 48-hour fasting window, we're not going to see huge amounts of weight loss. We're not going to see huge amounts of body compositional changes. If we were to extend the fasting beyond 48 hours, we're going to start seeing a differential shift in metabolism. That differential shift in metabolism is the impact that changes in ghrelin, changes in leptin, changes in insulin, changes in GLP-1, changes in glucagon, changes in cortisol, changes in epinephrine, changes in growth factors, all have on the hypothalamus that will have an impact on the pituitary that's going to have an impact on the production of thyroid-stimulating hormones and thyroid hormones. The combination of the changes in the circulating levels of peripheral hormones with changes in thyroid hormones leads to and changes in growth hormone lead to a total reduction in basal metabolic rate. That reduction in basal metabolic rate will not be seen in that first 24, 36, 48 hours, but will be noticeable once we start hitting that 72-hour window of time within a fast. That's where we start looking at a prolonged fast setting in. In a prolonged fast, we're going to see a secondary shift in fuel use where we're going to start to slow down the breakdown of lipids, breakdown of fats, for use at, in beta oxidation in order to provide ketones and ketone bodies to be used as a fuel source. And we're going to start to utilize proteins and amino acids. We're going to start to break down skeletal muscle. We're going to start to break down bone. We're going to start breaking down tendons and ligaments. Anything that has protein in it, we're going to start breaking that protein down in order to provide the amino acids to generate the metabolites necessary in order to get ATP for the body. But once again, that's not going to take place until we get into a prolonged state of fast. So, what's the take-home message in terms of fasting? Not everybody's going to respond the same way. Fasts are going to be individual based off of the same type of individual response we see with everything else. We're going to see everything fall along a normal curve in terms of responsiveness. Everybody will see a shift in metabolism. Everybody will see a shift in metabolic hormones that's going to regulate metabolism. Everybody's going to see a shift in inflammation and inflammatory responses during the fast. The degree of shift that we see is going to be dependent upon sensitivity to leptin. People who are less sensitive to leptin, people who have low leptin sensitivity, or people who are dependent upon leptin for regulatory purposes, will see smaller shifts in metabolic functions and smaller shifts in metabolic hormones than people who are less dependent on leptin for metabolic regulatory processes, or people who have normal leptin sensitivity. Everybody talks about this in terms of reduction of glucose, reduction of insulin, and changes in insulin sensitivity, because that's what we like to talk about when we start talking about metabolism and metabolic functions, particularly as it relates to diet and health, because everything as it relates to diet and health is somehow related to diabetes, even though that's not the case. We will see a change in insulin sensitivity. It's going to mirror changes in leptin sensitivity. It's going to be dependent upon how sensitive I am to insulin, how sensitive I am to leptin. What is my resting state of metabolic stress and metabolic syndrome at the point at which I am starting my fast? Regardless of what we're looking at in terms of metabolic functions, everybody will see a reduction in inflammation and inflammatory signals during the fasting period. Following fasting, coming out of fasting, we're going to see a greater responsiveness to growth hormones, a greater responsiveness to any of the anabolic hormones, a greater responsiveness to any type of growth factor. We will see a reduced level of ghrelin triggering responses. We will see a greater sensitivity to leptin, a greater sensitivity to ghrelin, a greater sensitivity to insulin, a greater sensitivity to GLP-1, a greater sensitivity to glucagon, that will lead to better metabolic regulation following the fasts. Fasting is not a cure-all, even though a lot of people online talk about it as being a cure-all. Everybody online likes to think about fasting in terms of caloric restriction, even though it's not about calories, it's about nutrients and what macromolecule, what macronutrient is being restricted from the diet during the fast. If we look at it holistically, fasting can have a positive beneficial effect on overall health as long as we do not do extended periods of fasting. Fasting ranging from 12 hours to 36 hours seems to be the quote-unquote sweet spot for the fasting window. A lot of people talk about doing 2-3 day water-only fast or 2-3 day juice fasts. Some people refer to those as cleanses. Once we get outside of that 36-hour window, the actual degree of change that we see, the actual amount of benefit we get from the extended fast gets lost, gets mitigated because of the adverse events and the adverse effects physiologically and metabolically that can take place because fasts go too long, where we're going to start to change the hormones, that's going to change the metabolism, that's going to reduce the total benefit that we can get from the fast. We're going to start to see a loss in the benefit of inflammation. We're going to see a loss in the benefit of fat mass reduction. We're going to see a loss in the benefit of metabolic regulation. once we get out into that 2.5 to 3 day window of fasting. Well, thanks for listening. Hope we got a little bit out of the discussion here on fasting. If you like what we're putting out there, please make sure you give us that big thumbs up, give us that big 5-star rating, let us know that we're doing a good job. If you have questions or comments about any of the topics, please make sure you drop us a line, let us know. We're more than happy to either address topics in further detail or provide you information on topics that are of greater interest to you based off of the topics that we're covering. Make sure you're following us here on the podcast as well as on YouTube, the written stuff in Substack, as well as the quick takes you'll find on Instagram and on Threads. Stay tuned for further discussions on diet, exercise, physiology, myths and misconceptions about how the human body works, and how we can go about living a healthy life.